Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Israel's crimes in Gaza continue, and so does its international isolation. Where are the new Trump trade deals? And India and Pakistan briefly go to war. First, Israel's crimes in Gaza continue. Prime Minister Netanyahu has given the go-ahead to the eviction of Palestinians from Gaza and the occupation of the West Bank. As Donald Trump's Middle East trip makes clear, the new Israeli offensive in Gaza ends the attempt to establish normal relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Trump's Middle East policy now focuses on the Arab countries, notwithstanding Trump's recent remarks that recognized starvation conditions in Gaza. Despite much talk about how Trump has distanced himself from Netanyahu over Iran and other issues, the reality is that Trump is doing and saying nothing to hinder Netanyahu's savagery in Gaza. Bezalel Smotrich, Israel's far-right finance minister, said, quote, "We're occupying Gaza to stay. There will be no more entering and leaving. The local population will be squeezed into less than a quarter of the Gaza Strip." As the Haaretz military expert Amos Harel predicted, the displacement of the population to areas of the humanitarian camps, combined with the ongoing shortage of food and medicine, could lead to further mass deaths of civilians. More Israeli leaders and officers could face personal legal proceedings against them, unquote. All that has come to pass. Israel is now targeting Rafah at the southern end of Gaza, where 1 million Palestinians fled following assaults in northern and central Gaza. These new raids are flattening the area. "We will replicate the model implemented in Rafah in other areas of the Strip as well," said an Israeli military spokesman. "That model shows ever more intense bombing and clearing of civilian homes and other structures, and a blockade of humanitarian aid. Israel's security cabinet approved on May 18, quote, the option of humanitarian distribution if deemed necessary, but using private American contractors. 52,000 Palestinians, including around 18,000 children, have been killed by the Israeli Defense Forces, and yet the far right is not satiated. Little wonder that Israel has failed to raise money from the Arab states or the UN for humanitarian assistance to Gaza. Imagine Israel, while continuing to destroy Gaza and engaging in forced removal of the population, is appealing to outsiders to provide assistance. Failing that, Israel is sending in a minimal number of aid trucks, about one-tenth the number it was allowing in earlier in the year. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called the situation in Gaza, quote, beyond atrocious and beyond inhumane. A policy of siege and starvation makes a mockery of international law. The blockade against humanitarian aid must end immediately, unquote. He said the UN would not participate in aid operations under such conditions, and called on restoration of the UN Relief Agency's work, the agency that Israel rejected on grounds that some of the agent's workers were part of Hamas. Britain, France, and Canada also issued an unprecedented rebuke of Israel's attacks in Gaza. "I want to put on record today that we're horrified by the escalation from Israel," said British Prime Minister Keir Starmer in Parliament. He called the offensive, quote, incompatible with the principles that underpin our bilateral relationship, and said that trade talks with Israel would end. Where are Trump's new trade deals? For about 3 weeks now, the Trump administration has been promising new trade deals following the imposition of historically high tariffs on at least 60 countries. Every day since then, we're promised an announcement of major deals that will make us proud. But with one exception, the United Kingdom, nothing has happened. In fact, it's not clear that there have even been talks about new trade deals with anyone except the British and the Chinese. President Trump said Britain agreed to increase market access for billions of dollars of American exports, including beef, ethanol, and other farm products, under a new trade deal, but he left many of the details to be worked out later. Meantime, the 10% additional tariff on British goods remains on the books. As the New York Times puts it, the agreement, quote, appeared to be more of a framework than a full trade deal. Both sides agreed to drop tariffs on specific products and made general agreements in other areas, but officials from both governments will still need to meet in the coming months to hammer out specific language. That can be a tricky and difficult process, leaving open the possibility the agreement could fall apart, unquote. Well, in fact, Britain has already ruled out U.S. beef imports that are treated with hormones and chlorine-washed chicken. The rest of Europe is looking in the opposite direction. The European Union has laid out 95 billion euros, or $107 billion worth of goods, mainly agricultural items and Boeing aircraft, that they could target with higher tariffs in retaliation for the duties that the U.S. has announced or imposed. The EU also said that the bloc would start a World Trade Organization dispute against the United States on both across-the-board tariffs and on duties on cars and car parts. All this depends on whether or not they can reach a trade deal. Only preliminary talks have taken place. India and Pakistan briefly go to war. A terrorist attack on tourists in India's part of Kashmir in April was the occasion for resumption of India-Pakistan fighting. India blamed Pakistan for the attack and then retaliated, perhaps not coincidentally, after a conversation between India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi and President Trump. After 4 days of fighting, in which both sides claimed victories, Trump said Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Rubio had mediated a ceasefire. Strangely, Pakistan, but not India, thanked the U.S. for its role. India insisted the ceasefire had come about through direct engagement with Pakistan. Almost immediately, both sides claimed violations of the ceasefire by the other, but so far the ceasefire has generally held. One feature of the brief fighting was the reversal of the pattern of arms suppliers over the years. India is mainly using Western-supplied arms, in contrast with the Cold War era, when Russia was the main arms supplier to India. The U.S. now provides about 10% of India's arms. France is the main supplier. China is by far the main supplier to Pakistan, over 80%. The U.S., once a major arms supplier to Pakistan, most conspicuously during the war in Afghanistan, now provides nothing. India and Pakistan are both claiming the superiority of their respective weapons systems. The fighting put China in a diplomatic bind. While it has a close relationship with Pakistan, it has resumed high-level engagement with India to get past their border skirmishes. That is why China called India's attack regrettable, but urged both sides to remain calm, exercise restraint. And so they did. In other news, the future of the National Security Council is in doubt. The firing of Mike Waltz as NSC director and the appointment of Marco Rubio to the position, in addition to his role as Secretary of State, raises questions about the National Security Council's future. Rubio's joint appointment suggests a diminished role for the NSC and his personal elevation to a more powerful position. Waltz's removal, he'll be the U.S. ambassador to the UN, apparently was due to his hawkish advice on Iran. According to New York Times interviews, quote, Waltz upset Trump after an Oval Office visit in early February by Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, when the National Security Advisor appeared to share the Israeli leader's conviction that the time was ripe to strike Iran. Waltz appeared to have engaged in intense coordination with Netanyahu about military options against Iran ahead of an Oval Office visit between the Israeli leader and Trump. California's climate legislation is blocked, and the administration's assault on the environment continues. 35 Democrats joined with Republicans to revoke California's landmark bill that would have banned gas-powered vehicles starting in 2035. These Democrats' argument is that working-class people would be hard-put to be forced to buy electric vehicles. A former environmental protection official said, on the other hand, that California's plan would, quote, save money, put the country in position to fight climate change, and allow us to compete in the global marketplace, unquote. 11 other states have adopted California's plan. 25% of new vehicles sold in California are EVs, far above the national average. However, there's a legal hitch in this vote. Congress may not be able to reverse a state law that was allowed by President Biden under the Clean Air Act, and with no provision for congressional review. This vote comes at a time when the entire range of climate change initiatives in the U.S. has been overturned by Trump. The EPA's budget and personnel have been dramatically reduced. The administration is suing states over their climate programs. Alaska's benefits from clean energy tax credits might be repealed in Congress, and the U.S. is no longer a player in international climate negotiations. Additionally, there's this report by The Guardian. The Trump administration has ordered the closure of 25 scientific centers that monitor U.S. waters for flooding and drought, and manage supply levels to ensure communities around the country don't run out of water. The U.S. Geological Service, Water Science Center's employees and equipment track levels and quality in ground and surface water with thousands of gauges. The data it produces plays a critical role across the economy to protect human life, protect property, maintain water supplies, and help clean up chemical or oil spills. Ukraine-Russia talks show little progress. The meetings in Turkey only produced two agreements, an exchange of 1,000 prisoners each, and a commitment to another round of meetings. The Russians would not agree to an unconditional ceasefire. Instead, they threatened to extend the war indefinitely if necessary. Trump had a two-hour phone conversation with Putin, which also made little progress. The Russians agreed to discuss a ceasefire with the Ukrainians, but, contrary to Trump's statement, did not agree that talks would start immediately. Pope Leo is telling it like it is. The new pope is speaking forcefully and without any false effort at balance. He calls Russia's war in Ukraine, quote, imperialist politics, where Russia wants to conquer a territory. He said U.S. politicians need to recognize the, quote, wickedness of Russia's actions. In support of migrant workers and families, the Pope said, to be called woke in a world that sleeps through suffering is no insult. He vows to serve the forgotten, uplift the broken. Deportation of Venezuelans hits roadblocks. The Trump administration has suffered two defeats in its quest to deport more Venezuelans. First, the Supreme Court ruled that until the case is further litigated, the administration cannot use the Alien Enemies Act as grounds for deportation. Second, Tulsi Gabbard's chief of staff has been discovered trying to change the intelligence community's finding that undergirds the administration's deportation case, that the Venezuelan gangs are under the Venezuelan government's control. Joe Kent, the chief of staff to Gabbard, ordered an intelligence analyst, Michael Collins, acting chair of the National Intelligence Council, to redo his findings, reminiscent of the George W. Bush administration's scandal over weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The intelligence community did review its findings and reaffirmed them. The personal consequences of this episode are playing out. Kent should be fired, but of course he'll probably be rewarded for his loyalty instead. After all, it was Donald Trump who insisted, contrary to facts, that Venezuela controlled the gangs. Kent, by the way, is a conspiracy theorist. At his confirmation hearing, he insisted that the FBI was behind the January 6 riots. I wouldn't be the least surprised if Michael Collins is fired. Laura Loomer and other deep state nitwits have him in their sights. Tulsi Gabbard has already removed Collins from his chairmanship of the National Intelligence Council. Trump did score a legal win regarding some 300,000 Venezuelans who are in the United States under a Biden-era ruling that granted them temporary protected status. A federal judge has removed the block on deporting the Venezuelans, and Trump's argument on national security grounds has proven effective. Finally, a few updates. From Germany, Friedrich Merz won appointment as chancellor on the second ballot, a disappointing outcome for him. He needed full support from the Social Democrats as coalition partners to get enough votes. Now Germany faces the huge challenge of leading Europe. One expert commentator said, quote, people have been asking Germany to lead for a long time, and there is no more space to not heed that call. Everything that has been undergirding post-war Germany in the past eight decades is no longer the case, whether it be open markets and free trade, whether it be the U.S. security presence in Europe. And in Romania, a centrist has won election as president over a Trump-aligned nationalist. Nicu Sordan has defeated George Simion, ensuring that Romania will continue to support aid to Ukraine and NATO. Simion thought he would be the sure winner after a Romanian court canceled the previous presidential election, charging Russian interference. As he fell behind in the polls, however, Simion tried the usual Trump claims of election fraud. It didn't work. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.